Hey guys, are you new to Austin and you are having a little trouble navigating the tricky waters of the Austin music scene? Let me tell you about a great resource for you. It's the Austin Music Foundation. The Austin Music Foundation is a nonprofit whose mission is to strengthen and connect Austin's music community with innovative programs that empower music professionals and Austin's creative economy. With expert panels, consultations, mentoring, and mixers, AMF's programs provide the necessary tools and opportunities to succeed in the Austin music industry. To get involved, simply go to austinmusicfoundation.org.
And you may ask yourself,
how did I get here? And now here is your host, Johnny Maldi.
All right, hello, I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I have a fantastic show for you today. Scott Collins from Scott Collins Project is here. We have a great conversation. He is going to put out a new album out in March of 2017. But you can go to scottcollinsproject.com and pick up his last EP, Sleeper, which is absolutely fantastic. He has a show tonight, if you're listening to this, the day that it comes out, Tuesday, November 22nd. They're playing tonight at the Mohawk. So go to scottcollinsproject.com, find out what you need to know to keep up with the band, pick up some music, get involved, and you'll enjoy our conversation. Scott's a great guy, really talented, great songwriter. And we have a great conversation. So that is coming up in just a second. Before we get to that, happy Thanksgiving 2016. Where are you listening to this? Are you on a plane? Are you in a plane station? An airport? Maybe you're in your car driving. Maybe you're in your family's house. Maybe you're going for a jog, getting away from the fam. You're hanging out with Johnny. Thank you for doing that. I'm thankful for you for doing that. Maybe you're listening to this on your travels. Maybe you're listening to this when you're already with your family. Are things getting out of hand? Is the politics coming to the table? I was going through the guest list at my Thanksgiving with my family that I'm going to in Houston on Thursday. I was thinking to myself, is there anybody there that's going to it's going to sound some sort of alarm and freak somebody else out, and then someone's going to get mad and say something, and then in my family, since we're Cuban, There's crying. So people cry. They yell and then they cry. And then there's sadness, and then everybody makes up. It works out in the end, but I don't like it when you have one day to kind of enjoy your family. And, you know, those things, you're hanging by a thread, basically, is what I'm saying, when you're with your family. And with all the upheaval that's happening, there's got to be somebody in your house that's like a vehement supporter of either side, is either freaking out because, I knew she won the election. She won the popular vote. This happened to us in 2000 as well. This is terrible. You're terrible. Why did you vote for him? He's disgusting and abhorrent. There's that person. I call that person definitely the bleeding heart liberal that's very upset about what's happened. I'm going to go protest the White Lives Matter march. And so there's that person. And then there's like the, well, what do you think? She's a criminal. She should be in prison. He's right. I wonder if anyone uses the argument, I love The Apprentice. That would be a good one. Anyway, listen, so yeah, I hope that you're enjoying your Thanksgiving. And obviously, you're listening to this. Maybe you're getting away. Maybe you're going to sit in a place where no one's going to talk to you except for me and my great guest today, Scott Collins. We have a great conversation. As I said, go to scottcollinsproject.com and find out when they're playing, because they are playing tonight, if you're listening to this, November 22nd, Tuesday, November 22nd, at the Mohawk, okay? I want to tell you, I'm really thankful for you guys for listening to this show, and I appreciate you listening. And at Thanksgiving, I'll be thinking about you. And I'll also be thinking about Scott Collins, who's a really nice guy, all right? Here comes our conversation. It's great. I enjoy it. I hope you enjoy it. I hope you have a great Thanksgiving. I hope Scott Collins has a great Thanksgiving. And do it up. Talk to you on Friday. Let's get down. playing with Jane Ellen Bryant.
Mm-hmm.
I like her, man.
I love her. She's so sweet, so amazing, talented, everything she's done.
Did you worked with Frenchie, right?
Yes.
Yeah, because you did that song. What was the song that was in the NASCAR?
Marigold.
Marigold. Great song, by the way.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Yeah, that song's had an amazing journey. And that's one thing I really love about songs is their journey. And it just started out and it's had a huge journey.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been overseas. Got 40,000 views in Europe. The music video, when we did a music video campaign with the smalls.com out of the UK, a music video and a film blog back in 2012 when we recorded with Frenchie and did that album, Agnes.
Man.
Yeah.
How's that? Do you like recording with him? I love him, man.
Recording with Frenchie is the best thing ever.
Yeah.
Really. It's an experience, especially when you get the chance to work with other producers. When I had first started working with Frenchie, he was like the first producer I'd ever worked with. I had done all my own stuff. And so working with Frenchie was the first legit producer. And he is a whirlwind.
Yeah.
And he will just whip you into shape. So in a really positive, inspiring way. Like he'll kind of grab you and tell you, like, kid, here actually is all of the potential you have. It's going to take a ton of hard work, but you can do it.
He's a great cheerleader, man.
The best.
Yeah.
So, yeah, working with him and then working with other producers has really put a kind of a pinpoint on Frenchie in that he makes magic. When you make a record with him, it's like, it's magic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some of that last EP I did, Sleeper, if I can't, it's hard to recreate that, to put a band together and recreate that sound that we made. So that right now just kind of lives in this magical moment that can resurface, you know, at any time. And Frenchie and I, he'll text me randomly all the time, just like, hey, dude, listening to Sleeper. Oh my God, that was magic. Working with Hunt Sales and, you know.
Oh, you worked with Hunt?
Yeah, he played drums on it. Yeah, he showed up, drank 12 cups of coffee, hadn't heard a single song. Goes up, goes, let's go, kid. Fuck the pre-pro. I'm really, sorry if I'm loud. Cuss on this. Anyway, go upstairs. So he sits in the live room. I sit in the vocal booth, you know, with the piano, because one song's piano and one all the rest are guitar. And I don't even have these songs fully produced. You know, we're just trying to get scratch tracks and all the drums.
Right.
And I'm sitting there just playing them, screaming, chorus, verse, two more times. All right, here comes the end, and screaming while Hunt Sales is just staring at me and just killing it. Just killing it. It's like Frenchie just grabbed both of us, put us on a plane, looked over the edge, and pushed us off. And Hunt was like, I do it all the time.
That sounded like a Frenchie analogy.
I kind of felt it. I felt it as it came.
That's
I felt
amazing.
It as it came.
Yeah. You know, I did a record a long time ago, like 15 years ago. My band and I took some money and opened our own studio after Frenchie started the bubble, just kind of like saw what he did, and we just started this thing. And the first record that we brought in that wasn't us was this guy Dickie Lee Irwin, and the producer was Hunt Sales. I was engineering, and so my very first like full-on experience with Hunt Sales, it wasn't great. He was not in the best shape Hunt can be. He was actually in the worst shape he could be.
No way.
And at first it was a love affair, because obviously I have such a reverence for the history of rock and roll that, like, just the fact that I was, and also comedy, like, I was going to be in there not only with the fucking guy from the guy that played drums on Runt and on fucking Lust for Life and, you know, and all this different shit, but I was going to be with fucking
Soupy Sales.
Yeah, I was going to be with fucking Soupy Sales. Look, it's making the hair on my arm stand up.
I know.
But we ended up, there was a broken thing. We weren't pals after it.
Well, but, I mean, if you were working together, y'all were like roommates, so you had to get to know each other after the honeymoon period.
But the beautiful thing is, I invited him to be on the show, and we didn't make up on the microphones. We made up outside before he came in, and it was great. But the story I was going to tell that's so awesome, he's the only guy that in the middle of talking, he just leaned over, and he looked at which one was the stop button, he stopped, and he goes, let's go smoke for a little while.
Oh my God, that is so
awesome.
Sales.
Yeah. Yeah. So you recorded with him.
Yes.
That's just, isn't that cool? Isn't that cool that we live in a world now? I don't like it. I wish that those guys were still super famous and untouchable.
Yeah.
But it's still pretty cool that you can get Hunt Sales to play drums on your fucking song.
It's beyond cool. It's one of those things that if it doesn't humble you, then check your ego hard. Because, like, yeah, Hunt Sales, like, needs work. I need work. I'm not saying, like, he's poor. I'm saying we're musicians. We always need work. Unless you're these famous people. And there are people like Hunt Sales who did Lust for Life. He used the snare from Lust for Life on Sleeper. And, there's the history outweighed any cost of anything, you know, involved in anything. But it's still a hard hustle. And, yes, it's amazing that a kid like me could just get thrown off the plane with Hunt Sales falling playing guitar while he's playing drums, and me and him just communicating with nothing else except the music and the free fall, and Frenchie just kind of laughing his ass off as we do it.
Yeah,
it is amazing, and it's cool that then we could support each other and forgive each other and, you know, like, yeah, just do the whole thing. It's mind-blowing.
So the new EP that's coming out in March, that is that's something you did with Chet Himes. Because you started a studio, you opened a studio.
Yes, we another jump off the
plane.
Tell
me about
analogy.
That. How's that?
Yeah, so we just kind of stumbled upon it. Found this wonderful property in South Austin at William Cannon and Manchac, right across from the Sprouts. So it's a beautiful acre and a 1959 remodeled house. Chet Himes had
a studio. By Space.
Yes, right down the street from Space. Yeah, right down the street.
Okay,
yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Cool. Yeah, Chet had his studio out in Dripping Springs, you know, with all his gear. He had a Rupert Neve 5088, all this amazing outboard gear. I still have to learn about it.
Real quick, didn't he have the studio that was at the street for a while?
That was before.
But that was years ago.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
and then he moved out to Dripping Springs.
And then he was out to Dripping Springs, and then that guy kind of decided, like, I just don't want this anymore. Like, I just want to play guitar in this beautiful studio you built me or something. I think I may have that wrong. But anyway, he was like, you know, I'm building this studio for y'all. Is there any, you know, it might be a great opportunity if we can make this home base and actually take this from just me and, like, a tiny little rig in this amazing pro-sounding Chet Himes studio. Let's see if we can take it to the next level. So, you know, we got everyone invested, every cent and beyond, to get this house and this space, and Chet designed it, built it. It's the most beautiful, you know, dead room in the world. And then we were able to transfer all the gear over from that studio and just kind of pick up there. And we had our soft opening in 2016, and we're working on our hard and hard release in 2017. But 2016 was great. We had Van Wilk's ninth studio album. We did...
Oh, that last one that
Yeah,
came
the
out?
Last one that it's just came great. Out. Yeah. That was... I would just sit there all day, every day, and listen to them just mix and master and rock that thing out there. Obviously, they didn't master it there, but... But yeah, man, did Van Wilk's record, Modest Yahoo, 10-year anniversary live recording at Stubbs. We had a live show with the Lost Austin band, like Gary Pinon and his crew. Gary couldn't make that show, but it was like over 100 people at the house donated to the Austin Songwriters Group. It was our first charity. So right now, and we have a rehearsal space in the back called Shedsville that is fully soundproofed just like the studio. And Whitman won Band of the Year a few years back, and they had a kind of one last show ever this past year at Stubbs, and so they rented out the recording space or the rehearsal space for a few months and rehearsed there. So 2016 was a really good, like, soft opening, and 2017 looks hopeful. But right now we are just focusing on, like, my music and basically that, like, because we have a lot of songs. We have 11 songs that we're going to split up into, like, 3 or 4 EP releases, like, 3 or 4 months at a time.
I know why, but for the people listening, explain why you would do something like this instead of releasing all 11 songs at once.
There's so many reasons, really. The main reasons is since no one's buying records, I would love to print an actual, like, big physical release EP, and I will do that at the end of this, but with so much material and such a small attention span, and everyone could get your music immediately, to us it seems better to keep everything fresh and new and relevant and flowing constantly. I'm also a songwriter that has to transfer, like, 750 songs from my phone over to my computer every so odd months just to not have my phone die, where it's like the material isn't going anywhere. And why just build these huge, massive records and do these big releases when there's just such a multitude of songs that could come out and people can get to know each song and then go back and revisit. And I have visions for the artwork of tying things together. And for me, I just love the cinematic element of music and like a thematic element of tying things together, making things kind of more cinematic, to repeat myself. Yeah. But yeah, releasing EPs allows more material, more fresh material coming out, and a chance for artists to actually record more and do more, work more, tour more, not always just have to focus on 12 songs at a time that may be missed. There may be one song from that makes it, and 11 songs that are never heard of, that are sleeper songs.
Well, that's the thing that I've noticed, that over at least just the last, like, let's just say 6 years of people releasing their albums, and the big thing is to you promote it on all the social media platforms, but each release, be it a single, be it a video, be it a podcast, be it an entire album, they all have like a 55-hour lifespan. So in my estimation, it's like, why not release 11 singles and get, you know, it's 11 times 5,000 hours of, or 500 hours or 600 hours of time, as opposed to just those 55 hours that are
popping. Yeah. Yeah. And it's just, one thing that keeps popping to mind as I'm doing this is thinking of the Bright Light Social Hour Israel Nash combo. I think they're releasing like multiple EPs, not just one or something. And it's like, I am in love with their new song for some reason. I just love it. But to the point where I hear it so much that, you know, when you listen to a song so much, you might get burnt out. But if they are then now going to release new stuff, how rad is that? That then I could go back and revisit that song in an age where everything moves at.
But do you think that the kind of music fan that we are, that hears something and then goes back and researches and gets into a thing, do you think that kind of music fan is being bred now? Do you think that they're people with our concern for learning everything about a band that we can't, you know what I'm saying? Like, do you think the kids have that in
but them? Maybe with Google, like, there's a lot of statistics I'm hearing. Well, there's statistics that I'm hearing that are switching everything.
Like a commercial for Google.
I know, but maybe with Google. But maybe with Google, you can have an education, children. No internet access here. No, it's like there's a statistic that came out, it's maybe not related, but about texting and driving, about how kids aren't under 25 or 25 and under aren't actually texting and driving because they've been raised and taught not to. But all of us who are new to this are all texting and driving like crazy because none of us were taught that. We just now see ads that it's unsafe. But so in music, what were you talking about?
I was talking about the music fan. Like you were saying,
yeah, the fan.
You were saying you are a music fan.
Yeah.
And what you were saying was, how great is it that they'll put out this song and then I'll get so interested in that I'll go back and start listening to the old songs. And I'm saying, like, I know you're younger than me, but people your age and up, and people that grew up in a time when there wasn't that immediacy.
Mm-hmm.
Do they still are there music fans being bred now with that sort of like hunger to find more? Like, I love this Bright Light Social Hour song. Let me go back and listen to everything they've ever done.
Well, without rambling, because, you know, this is something I would have to research.
That's the best thing about a podcast, is you can just ramble.
Like, I know.
Could be the show if you wanted to.
I know.
It's up
and
to
forget,
you.
Go, but what was the question? But No, I think, man, and I had a good thought. I think people will. I think they will research just because there is an access to things and just a lot of curiosity right now. And music's changing. There's so much of a release of stuff. It's like, I don't know, but yeah, because you're asking a music fan. So I'll research everything. When I hear something and I hear a name of who all's involved, I will research everything. But that comes, I think, you know, from that age of wanting to do that versus then now you're talking yeah. about will the new crop
yeah.
research that stuff. I'm a hopeful guy. I think, not to plug Google again, they will. I think there's so much curiosity right now that in this climate, too, people are going to be looking to music, maybe just not on that surface level of it makes me feel good, of like, I need something a little bit deeper. Like, who is this guy? What? Oh, he has other songs? So I'm hopeful for that.
Well, I feel like they're over the last 5 years as well, like the electronic dance music thing fused with pop music and really sort of created this second, not second wave, but like whatever version wave of this is of disco, of like you always get the same thing. You get the breakdown that goes dum, dum, dum,
right, yeah.
Like every song had that.
I know.
Even Madonna.
Yeah.
And, it's interesting, yeah, because it seems like then also, and I don't want to sound old either, I try very, very hard to not sound like grown-ups did when I was a kid, like talking about things like, well, they just use computers to make that music. But then sometimes you're like listening to shit people are making now, and you're like, they just use computers to make that music. Like,
yeah, but at least you have awareness and positive intention.
They don't even have any of this shit in there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, oh, yeah. All these amazing things we're looking at. Yeah. And, you know, I finally kind of remembered, and this may just be a personal perspective, but playing shows more now, I'll have people coming up to me singly and being like, where can I find you online? Where can I find more of you online? Like people yelling out, where can I find you online? Where can I find more online? Where can I find more about you online? When are you playing? And it's all this focused online. I just say, Google Scott Collins music, and they all laugh. And it's like, no, seriously, like I've put in a lot of work, you know, type in your name into stuff, but I'm kind of everywhere on the internet. If you just type me into Google, you can research me, and they seem really excited. So to answer your question, seeing that excitement and at least verbal actual intrigue at shows coming straight up to me makes me hopeful that they are going to be very interested in music to dive deeper and maybe become bigger fans than just an aesthetic, you know,
that's what I hoped for
they're going through.
That's what I hoped for with this show, because I noticed that in the culture, even like since the beginning of like American Idol, people latch on to people's stories, and the more that they know someone, the more they want to hear what they have to say. And to me, in this format, I'm not just going like, hey, what's the craziest gig you ever played? Hey, what's with the name of the band, man?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, we talk and people get to know you. You express your opinion on things and your love of Google, and people will get to know you a little bit better. Jesus. And hopefully connect with something and want to hear more about what you have to say.
Yeah.
Okay, real quick. What's it like working with Chet Himes? I mean, didn't that guy do the Green, the Flamingo Christopher Cross album?
Yeah, he did basically everything, Christopher Cross. He ran all the Warner Brothers studios, the Amigo studios and Warner Brothers. It's amazing. The most amazing, there's two amazing things that I get from it. One is learning patience. Because I work with Frenchie, so you know what it's like to get thrown. I know what it's like to get thrown off a plane, blah, blah, blah. But working with Chet Himes, I'm learning patience.
Yeah.
One thing I love about this business is learning every perspective I can. And learning from him is, yes, learning this old school ways, but then I'm seeing how old school ways aren't happening. But then also getting to hear the most amazing random stories that pop out. Like
what else did he do? I mean, I know he did like my friend Mark Hallman's EP that he did with Eliza Gilkison in 1982. But
I didn't even know.
I know he did a lot of stuff.
His list is like,
it's crazy.
Like 8 pages. I mean, he's done everything. He did Ghostland Observatory studio right before ours. Everything Christopher Cross. It's weird. Oh yeah. He did not Aaron's.
Jonas's?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, his home studio. But yeah, the Christopher Cross, I keep hearing it everywhere now. I even heard it in like a Walmart or something from the movie that got him the Academy Grammy, the
He did the Arthur song?
Arthur, yeah, the Arthur song.
You do the drinking
song. In New York City. Yeah, no, I saw it on TV, and now I can't stop hearing it. And I haven't heard that song once in my entire relationship with Chet in the last, like, 2 years.
You know what
years.
I remember the most about that? I can't remember if it was the Grammys or the Oscars of that year, because I loved that movie.
That's an amazing Chet Hines story,
When he performed... When Christopher Cross performed that at the Oscars or the Grammys, Dudley Moore played piano and Christopher Cross sang.
Wow.
Yeah, because Dudley Moore's an amazing piano player.
Yeah. That is cool.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
That's cool. Yeah, and Chet told me a really cool story of that. Like, that night, I hope it's okay that I'm telling this. I'm sure he's cool. But, he was standing next to, like, two massive actors, two really famous big actors at the time. Angelina Jolie's dad, amazing actor. What's his
John
name?
Voight.
Yeah, so like John Voight and someone else, and just little Chet just standing between them, just holding his Oscar, just grinning, and he's just thinking to himself, what do these guys think about this little fuzzy hobbit just grinning his ass off holding an Oscar? It's just amazing, like, what he's been, yeah.
That's cool. Killer, man.
Cool, humble life to just kind of sit there and just be like, hey, guys.
Well, also, even better than an Oscar. And even better than having, like, Album of the Year. Because didn't that album, did one Album of the Year and fucking Song of the Year? Maybe. It was one of those kind of albums. I remember that fucking Flamingo was at everyone's house. You went to your mom's friend's house. Everyone had that record there. But one of the best things about it is there's a fucking Saturday Night Live skit.
Sorry, is there? And
obviously somebody's got to be playing Chet because it's the recording studio and they're recording Ride Like the Wind.
Oh.
And the thing is, it's kind of like a joke about Michael McDonald. And Michael McDonald's sitting in the control room, and then it's time for him to go, such a long way to go.
Yes.
And he like walks out and does it, and then comes back in and keeps on talking to everyone, and then goes back out and does it again. Yeah.
Never seen it. Yeah. Never seen it. Again, Google, you get a
history.
Dang old freaking plug, but I'm gonna Google that.
So where are you from?
I was born in Chicago, but I was raised here. Okay. So I lived in Chicago till I was 8, and that's kind of where I formed all my magical suburban Illinois, you know, memories.
Wait, Rockford?
No, Inverness Palatine area. That
Rockford's the only one I know because I'm a huge Cheap Trick fan.
Inverness Palatine are all I know, so I say it like, just kidding, but Inverness Palatine area, family in Downers Grove. But yeah, no, lived there till I was 8, grew up in Austin, but luckily I'm going back in January to play Chicago for the first time.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
It's just cool.
I didn't write it down though. Okay, so what were your parents? What did they do?
What
do they do?
God, so much philanthropy. My dad worked in computers most of his life, and now they are retired and do philanthropy. They've been doing that for a long time, running a bunch of organizations, running a bunch of huge charity events. And yeah, they've been doing that and now helping me with the studio. I mean, I run everything. And yeah, he kind of helped me get the house and go in on the studio. He is myself and him and are one of the many investors, but basically doing philanthropy and then now using Sideshow Paradise Records, my LLC, and Chicken Run Studios, and then Scott Collins, everything pooled together to then funnel back out into philanthropy. So we're trying to make everything a family business, make it music business, and then everything go to charity that we can.
Wow.
If that makes sense.
So kind of like not a full nonprofit.
No, but kind of, since we're running a lot of things through their nonprofit. They have a nonprofit. I'm an LLC. But so we'll, do everything kind of for profit with the intention of giving to nonprofit. So every show will have a sponsor and donate to a nonprofit. And, you know, every record, everything we do, we'll try to focus on that.
So how did you find music? Like, where did you live? Like, when you moved here, what was the deal?
Music I found through I just my entire life. It's where I always went. Moving from Chicago to Austin was real hard. For me, it was very different. Like I said, I had solidified my suburban Illinois dreams or whatever. When I moved to Texas, it was like moving from a foreign country. I was not accepted well. And so at first I found humor helped.
Yeah.
Because I got to a point where I was crying, I guess, so much that even the TA was like, kid, you need to suck it up. And so I was like, well, this sucks. Yeah. So then I immediately switched to humor. So they got the call, kids class clown. Anyway, I had this dream. Everyone was playing their recorders in the music room. And I kick in the door with this red Telecaster and I just wail on it. I'd always have these dreams and they'd kind of manifest. Like I had a dream about a green cat. And then I got a cat that I had my whole life. But anyway, so I kick in the door and I'm wailing this guitar. And then through life, always adapting to different groups and cultures in like middle school and high school and never really knowing where to fit in, but just kind of trying to learn from everyone. Music was where I would always go. That was my private place. So even through college, I would go play music. When I'd play guitar growing up, I'd play piano. And I did take some guitar lessons. I was just always obsessed with it. I never thought about it. It was just always there. I actually never thought about it until now, answering that question, like, when'd you get into music? It's like, I see that it was a part of my life forever. My dad was a musician. He was in a band called The Last Generation. He chose between college
was that,
and
was that
music.
Like a, should I know that band?
You won't like it. No, but they did release a record and it was really cool. It was fun what they did. They play a lot and they did have a chance. It was one of those things. They were playing hotels and stuff and they could have gone on, but his mom chased him down at the airport with a broom. He's like, you're going to college.
Wait. So they were playing like hotels, like they'd play for a week.
Yeah, they like had massive residencies, hotels, and play all these amazing covers, and like, and now it's so cool because my dad and I can really relate and talk music, since we're in the music business together. So he'll tell me all these amazing stories. They're like, oh, my band covered that. I'm like, what? And he's like, yeah, I play the B3 here and hop on the piano here, and I could hit these harmonies, and our singer sounded just like him.
Does he still have any of his old keyboards?
No.
Fuck,
no.
That would be cool,
no.
Though, right?
No, yeah. Oh, God, yeah, that'd be amazing. But he has that record, and I'm going to listen to that someday and release it or something. But
yeah, why don't you re-release it? They're
going
to see you?
Actually, that's a really good idea. I never thought about that.
You got a label. Do it.
I know, right?
Repackage it.
Talk to him. See if he's cool with it. I want it to be a surprise. That'd be a nice little birthday surprise. Hey, guess what? I released your record. And nothing happened. Just kidding. Yeah, no, that's a great idea. Thanks.
So did growing up here around the music, did that have any influence on you?
Huge influence. Okay. It kind of made my music more eclectic, I feel like. Like, I'm working on these new songs. There's this producer and bass player, Dean Pierre, who's helping out. And he was like, I finally figured it out. I didn't get you. It's because you were born in Chicago. The way I talk and the way I write my music, it's like a mixture of country and then like this northern rock and roll and then like psychedelia folk at times, like psychedelic folk. But it's weird because I picked up all these different things from all these different groups. For most of my life, I played basketball on this traveling AAU team where I was the only white kid and we only listened to rap nonstop all summer, every summer for like 5-6 years, playing tournaments in Compton, LA, Watts, Inglewood, Santa Barbara, which is a tourist town. But it's like, it's been really cool being influenced by so much to where it's also been hard to find what I do. Like, I don't know what I like. I don't know what my what did you grow up listening to? I'm like, everything. Because everybody was listening to everything. When I came to Texas, everyone was listening to country, like Strawberry Wine. And then I'm going on tour listening to hip-hop. And then I'm coming home to kids listening to 311. And it's all over the place. So
I can never remember what they sang. 311.
Which one? 311? I just remember the song Down, Down. Down, down. It'll be down. I don't know. Oh, we listened to it in drama class. I remember my friend listened to it in drama class in middle school. And when I was in middle school,
94, 95?
Yeah.
You were in middle school then?
Yes.
I was already married in 94.
Congrats, yeah.
Isn't that weird?
Me too, but it didn't work out, which is even odder. I'm just
kidding. Yeah, so how old are you?
31.
Oh, yeah, you're young, man. Man, you got a lot of stuff going on for a 31-year-old guy.
Hustling. I realized at this point in my life.
You are. You're a hardworking, hustling guy.
It's time to hustle. I want to do as much as I can for my family. It's like, I want to make it work. It's if people are going to finally have faith in me. I mean, I dropped out of everything. I lost everything and everybody. No offense to everybody. People love me.
No. Let's go back. What happened? What did you do?
I just dropped out. I mean, I jumped off the path.
What do you mean? What path?
Psychology. I was getting a master's.
Okay. So let's go back there. So you move here. You're doing a thing. You go to school. Yeah. You play music on the side for yourself, right? That's what you're doing?
Yeah. Just in my room, listening to stuff.
And I'm assuming what's at the early 2000s, mid-2000s?
Yeah, absolutely. 2005. I couldn't skateboard, so I played guitar. Like, I finally found my niche of friends that kind of made sense, where I could just, you know, read Jack Kerouac and not get hassled in the commons at school. Like, and there were the BMX bikers and the skaters, and so I wanted to skateboard, but I couldn't skateboard. But I could play guitar a little bit, so that's when I started faking it.
Your description of the people just sounded like a David Garza song.
Really?
Yeah.
Nice.
And the gold tooth stoners.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It's awesome. I found my people. I, you know, bought my Dickies, got my Elements t-shirt, and tried kick flips in the grass, realized I couldn't do it on the street, so I picked up a guitar, and we started a band called Mirrors Hurt the Most. But yeah, so from playing music my whole life, I guess kind of just creating on my own, and then in high school, finding these groups of people to actually create music with was really cool. And then I went, but then, you know, high school ended and I jumped right on that path of, well, what am I going to do with my life? Well, I love psychology. I'm interested in the human mind and different perspectives and why people do things. And so I studied that towards the end of high school and then all through college. I got a bachelor's at University of Texas in psychology with a minor in education, and which sent me again on the path to SMU in Dallas to get a master's of counseling in science.
So you got a master's?
I didn't. Oh. I dropped out for rehab, tattoos, and rock and roll.
For rehab, tattoos, and rock and roll? Wait, you had to go to rehab?
I put myself in a program to get clean and sober because I wanted to...
Was it drinking?
Yeah. It was booze and just trash can junkie pills, basically.
Pills?
Oh, yeah.
How do you get pills? Like, that's one of those things. I mean, I know there's a heroin epidemic because people get addicted to pills because of pain pills, and then they get taken away, and then they're addicted, and then they have to go get heroin. But how do you get pills? It seems real hard. So, I mean, I come from a family of doctors, and you'd think I'd know.
Yeah. I kind of came into this... No, and I'd be brutally honest about anything. You know, I never will say names, get anyone in trouble, but I was misdiagnosed and over-medicated. What people didn't know about me, they assumed... As a kid, okay. Yeah. I had an obsessive-compulsive order very severely as a child. I don't mean, like, organizing things now as an adult. I mean, I had OCDs. I could not walk through a door without flipping a light switch the magic amount of times that everyone would be okay, and I wouldn't... And I, you know, I'd fall down crying. And no one knew about it, and I just fought through it. I got to a point in my life where I realized this is enough. I can't live with this, but I'm not going to let it win. So I just kind of fought through it and turned it into... So anyway, come to later in life, booze and pills through other things. People didn't notice that I was an alcoholic. So when I started seeing doctors, they would see these traits and think they were something else and start giving me pills for those things. But those pills would cause side effects that were even worse.
Can I ask you a question real fast?
Yeah.
Were you a good liar?
No, I hate lying.
Okay,
lying makes me sick.
Go ahead.
No way. No, I've always been honest.
Because you seem like one of those guys that's so smart that you could get in a situation where you're outsmarting, like, the system.
No, I'll just act dumb.
Okay.
I'm one of those that'll just
act
dumb.
I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, no worries at all. But no, lying makes me feel sick. I hate lying. I don't see anything in it. But just misdiagnosed, unfortunately, and over-medicated, because there's a cycle you can get on where if they give you a pill they think it's for a disorder, but you don't have it or need it or at the right dosage, then you have to take another pill for that side effect. Basically, I had everything. I had an American flag of pills. I remember I put them out on a counter one day, and it was all red, white, and blue.
It was like
art. Yeah, it was disgusting. And But what happened was I flushed them all down the toilet one day. You know, through my life, I've had these forms of rock bottoms where I could either keep going or I could say, screw it, I need to change everything.
What was it? What was it? What was it? What was your bottom?
It was, for this, it was a happy moment. It was weird. It was realizing that I flushed all the pills down the toilet. And I was still going to Walgreens and getting every over-the-counter sedative medication you could get. Advil PM, Tylenol PM, Benadryl. And taking 5 Benadryl and 4 Advil PM after drinking all night at 5 in the morning. And leaving my door unlocked so my brother could find... You know, sorry, Mom, sorry. You know, just like, you know, it's like even without all the legal medications, I was going to the counter without even realizing it.
You were trying to hurt yourself.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And so, and then mixed with the drinking, so doctors... a mixture. And again, people, keep in mind when you hear something... try to remember the iceberg principle. There's always 10% that you see or hear, but 90% underwater that you don't know, that you don't see or hear. There was a lot going on. But technically, yes, on the surface, trying to hurt myself was in a lot of pain, lonely. It hit this point of, I think people can get at where it's a bad mixture of hopelessness and helplessness. You know, if you have one or the other, it's bad. But if you have both, it could be real bad. But I feel very blessed to be one of those cases that would just kind of be like, F this. I'm not doing this. I'm not going out this way. And I would see things. I would just see these obvious things. It's like, how could you go from that to 12 Advil PM before you go to sleep? Like, that's even worse, man. So it would be, so that was the type of thing of like reaching out to those who, I guess, those that I had. And just like, please, you know, any help I can get, I need to do this. I want to do it. And so through that, when I got clean and sober, I was in grad school and I was just looking at my place there. And it's like, I don't have the empathy to do this right now. The way all this is set up, this program, how everything's from a textbook and like no one's thinking outside of the box. It's like, I don't have the empathy for this right now. For some reason, I feel driven to live my life. My way. I don't know what that means. And I feel like it's music. So I told grad school I needed a break. They gave me 3 years off. They're like, cool, take 3 years off. You can come back if you want. So I got a job at Urban Outfitters and I started hanging out at a tattoo parlor. And through Urban Outfitters,
That's why you have all those tattoos.
Yeah, that's why I'm dipped.
You have like finger tattoos and everything.
Yeah. Sideshow Paradise. It's the label, but spelled wrong. Dice, to be funny.
I thought it said Paradise.
Like, it can, exactly. Say. I know. Yeah. But yeah, man, worked at Urban, so met this kid, was like, yeah, you know, I can play some drums. I've got this 4x4 rental space with a condenser mic.
Just ask you a question.
Yeah,
though.
We got into music.
You're in a path. You're at SMU. That's a pretty fucking expensive school. It's like, if you're going to SMU for grad school, you're going to school, man. You're not fucking around.
Yeah, it wasn't on the campus. It was out in Plano.
Well, still. Just
so it was private, but I get
family,
what you're saying.
The family of SMU, like, you're putting down the amount of cash that you need to go to this class, I mean, to this school. You know, you're obviously taking it pretty seriously. So did you ever, like you're folding clothes at Urban Outfitters and just all of a sudden be like, the fuck am I doing here?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not laughing at you. I'm just thinking of the absurdity of folding clothes and going like, wait a minute. I got you. Like you said, I got off that path. You're like, I got off that fucking path, dude. Like, where am I going?
Yeah. But
did you ever worry?
It's, of course, just like, not to be dramatic, people think about death. It's inevitable, but you just keep going on. That was my thing. I would worry, but it couldn't win. I had to keep going. My hustle was too strong. It was too big.
Did you ever worry about the path that you chose? like you were on a path to
Did I worry about
a normal path of success in life that people go on, and they have a family and they have a house with a thing, and then, you know, they have an affair.
No.
Drink too much.
I wasn't. I was very, very live or die about it. Like I was very just all in, very ready to die, willing to do it, whatever it took. My first band was called the Suicide Pistols, and it comes from a tattoo, but I named my band that for the idea of where I had come from, where if you don't have anything to live for, if you don't think you have anything to live for, find something to die for. Meaning, like, not in a dramatic sense, die for something, but, like, I found music, and it made me happy, it made me comfortable, and people would ask, like, are you sad? It's like, no, because I know how I'm going to pass. I'm going to pass in music. I've made the choice to live in music, so I can now pass happy. You know, it's like, living honestly.
Yeah. Do you have that relationship to music where it, like, saved your life? Like, it got you, if you found a way to express things and get out of you that you cannot get them out any other way except for making songs.
Absolutely.
And singing them.
I thank the spirits every time I write a song, even when I don't have time to work with them. I'm like, sorry, guys, we can't work on the song right now. Even if it's Hank, I've said this before, if it's like Hank Williams' cousin's friend's spirit who's helping me write, I don't know what it is. But yeah, I don't like sit down and say, I'm going to write this song about this. Yeah. They just come out. They've come out from day one. When I was living, when I dropped out of grad school and a little down the road, I decided to come back to Austin once I realized that I could do the songwriting thing and not just fake it and tell folk singers that I could play guitar until they realized that I was just an alcoholic who really couldn't play guitar. Right. But I realized I could write songs. So I decided to come back to Austin from the Dallas-Fort Worth area that I was gigging all in. And so, and I was sober again. I think. Anyway, I got robbed. I was living in my car by choice. I feel terrible for anyone that has to, but by choice, I was living in my car to save money and really just kind of do it.
My friend Jake did that.
Okay, yeah. So, anyway,
weird, though.
It was weird. You spend a lot of time on couches. You don't shower a lot. You really appreciate a faucet.
That was the main question.
You know, you get used to gas stations and rock clubs. You just have to get used to a rock club. It sucks. I appreciate getting older and not, I mean, it makes you appreciate a lot. I love the perspective of appreciation, but anyway, I got robbed. So in my car, they took everything. They left me with one pair of cowboy boots and a guitar. That was it. So they left me with a country song.
They left
song.
A guitar? Yeah.
Because they couldn't grab everything. It was the, right. It was the one Gibson V-Paul II that my brother gave me, when I started out, and it was on the very bottom. They just couldn't grab it. They grabbed two keyboards, two guitars, two amps, my backpack, all my clothes, all my stuff, everything they could grab. Within an hour, I was gone. Anyway, as I was driving back to Austin that morning at 8 a.m., just my mind snapped, and I was listening to Sunvolt, and the way he was singing this song, it was like Cocaine and Cigarettes or something, the song about Mick Jagger's dad, but anyone snorting cocaine and his dad. But so I was listening to this song, and my mind just snapped. And with the broken window and just loud wind, I just started singing, and four songs just came out of me. And I just wrote on the dashboard, and it's like I started singing differently. My voice started changing. It's like it just tore out of me. And at that point, the journey was on. And there's a lot more. Then the journey was on. I mean, I went back and played my first gig at Headhunters back in Austin, and that's when Billy Milano was running the place. He kicked out the headlining band from L.A. and almost threw a stool at someone and turned to me and goes, "You're playing two sets, kid." I only had seven songs, and I broke a string the first song. But the crowd was cool, and they had the back patio. Anyway, the crowd was just like, you know, fuck it, punk rock it, kid, fix your string. So I fixed my string, and I kept playing. I ran out of songs. I was like, I've got two sets. Someone yell out a word. Someone yelled out, you know, divorce. And so I just improvised a song about divorce, and the crowd got bigger. Yeah. And someone yelled out gonorrhea. The crowd got bigger. And so my first gig, just I packed the fucking house, full improv. And then for about a year and a half, I would play all improv gigs for 2 hours. And just like on 6th Street, and it was amazing. It was an amazing time. I was drinking though, so I was like gone. So I'd have a drummer I found from Florida and some female singing at Shakespeare's on 6th Street for 2 hours, covered in sweat, and kids just like, where can we get that record? And it's like, you'll never get that unless you recorded that on your cell phone. That was all made up. And so starting like that was incredible. Just kind of, that's how I had to do it, was just all in. do or die. Just, you know, if I don't have 2 hours, make 2 hours happen. Yeah. Just do it. So yeah, man, I've basically just been hustling ever since. And then, and I've been, I did it for myself and to make it work. And anyone that's now believed in me, now it's for them. Now the hustle's for everyone that's is helping me and believes in me. So
I believe in you, man. It's kind of hard not to. You've got a good, you're not a snake oil salesman. You're like Frenchie. Like you could meet, that's what I mean. You know, like Frenchie, you meet him, he could be full of shit, but he's not.
No, I understand. I understand what you mean. Yeah. There are
he's
people
just on the hustle,
yeah,
man. That guy's like, not fucking around.
And honestly care about connecting the stars because I've seen the stars connect. I've seen, that's the thing I have learned from people like Frenchie, he's connected stars for people for no reason but just to do it, and it made the most amazing relationships happen and experiences. And right now that's what it's about, those memories and beautiful experiences, being able to pass it on. So thank you. That's a huge honor because at this point, like I tell people, I live the dream. The first gig I played in Dallas, when I told, I was playing with Amy Lovett, this folk singer. I told her I knew how to play guitar and blah, blah, blah. So I wrote some guitar piece to one of her songs. We played it live on stage at the Curtain Club, opening for this big band. And I had lived the dream. In that moment, it hit my head, like, you've lived the dream. Just hustle. If any, this is your career now. If anything comes from this, it's just part of it. Like, yeah, say you want to go to the Grammys. Make big goals, but realize none of that matters. It's just part of it now. Yeah. But, yeah, so I'm at least this point in my life with the new songs coming out, going through everything I've been through with ex-managers and all the suings and bands breaking up. And
suings?
Threatenings of suings over contracts that were never signed. But, you know, if one lawyer's better than another lawyer and he's doing it for free, you can't really fight them. So you just kind of have to give them
money. What happened?
Can
you talk about it? That's just weird.
It was just towards the end of my last band, Southbound Drive. We just had a fallout and a disagreement.
Within the band? The guys I
no,
had
no,
on
no.
here?
No, we were great.
Okay.
The guys were great. It was with management. Just had a fallout, a disagreement over someone wanting, you know, I guess just a little bit more, they felt. But it came out, yeah, from they just kind of quit. I was like, whoa, wait. And then was like, well, this is what I'm owed. And they got what they were owed because we didn't really have much. So, yeah. We did a Kickstarter, though, that was successful. That was the unfortunate part. We did this Kickstarter that was successful. It was wonderful. Did this really funny video of where are they now? So we had a makeup artist make us look all old. I developed an English accent for no reason, and I'm still living at my mom's house. My bass player is my gardener. And, like, anyway, we did this video that got us all these amazing hookups.
Wasn't he the guy that was on here last time?
Yeah, Lucas. Yeah, nice guy. Absolutely. And that was around that time. And that was, you know, we did some good touring and stuff, and that was after all the stuff we went through. We rallied together after what we went through, and just what we went through was just something that just kind of sucked. Someone who thought they knew a lot about the music business because of books, but then when it got real, it didn't really work out, and then they ended up walking away with kind of everything. But we kept hustling, and we toured, and we got our stuff together, and we got a new drummer, and our band was one of those weird bands. Everyone I've worked with has kind of lived their dream in a way, or like have moved on to something really cool. Like our drummer, our first one, said he would never quit the band unless he got called for Stomp on Broadway. It was his dream.
Did he get called for Stomp?
He got called in.
You're fucking kidding. Yeah, seriously?
I hope he's all the way there, but he's like, dude, I got the call. Like I'm into the first step. I'm into the wave. I'm sorry. And it's like, that's okay. And so we got a drummer immediately, and then Lucas, he's
and he
so
got a
amazing
part in Rent, and then he left the band. No,
yeah, no, Lucas got overnight to play with the Ventures. The Ventures were having a comeback. And just overnight.
And Lucas would have played with him?
Yeah.
Why do I remember that? Did he tell me that?
I don't know. Maybe. It may have been right around that time of when that was starting. So, yeah. So, it was one of those things. It just, everyone got these calls to these great gigs, and it worked out.
God,
but it worked
cool
out for me because I got to go solo, which
yeah.
I needed. I didn't know I needed. But, you know, it was one of my musical
rock bottoms.
And those
guys are cool with it? They like
it?
Oh,
we all love each other.
Okay,
it's good. I mean, the drummer, one of the drummers playing with Roxy Rocha, amazing funk soul band that he's got that in him. He needed to play in that gig. One was playing with Crooks when they were together. He was the guitar player.
Oh, they broke up?
Yeah. Sad for that, but amazing gig for him as a metal guitar player going through my weird Americana thing to them.
Not the Crooks that are on Modern Outsider from Britain, right?
No, this is Crooks, the...
oh, right. I know what you're talking about. Yeah. So many bands.
I know. That's why I'm just sticking with my name.
Do you just go under Scott Project? Project?
Yeah, well...
You scared people are... Alan Parsons is going to come after you and be all mad at you?
I'm more scared about my Twitter handle, which is Bootsy Collins. I hope Bootsy Collins doesn't just look
no,
at me.
No, he'll be cool.
No, yeah, I figured he'd be like, I don't care. You're fine, kid.
I say it like I know him. I just have this idea. Like, do you form those things? Like, there's those iconic sort of, like, people, and you're like, that's what that guy's like. We'd be great friends. No, yeah, Bootsy's not like
sometimes.
That.
Sometimes. You would think, yeah. But at least with my handles, everything's happened by accident.
Right.
Everything. Like, yeah. Even Boots Collins was just a nickname from my friend that because of music. So Scott Collins, yeah anyway.
You're going to be playing on December 7th at the Cactus Cafe with Jane Ellen Bryant, an artist that I find to be unbelievable.
I know.
She is a level of artist that is, and she's great, and she's so cool as a human.
Yeah, and she's been working with Chet Himes for a long time too. So she's a vocal coach and Frenchie. Yeah, exactly. That's what I love about how all these worlds are coming together. So yeah, I'll be playing with her and then Ty Austin, who's an amazing singer. But Jane Ellen Bryant, yeah, I'm so glad that I get to play with her. After seeing her release at One to One with Frenchie and then everything she did with Chet in the past, yeah, it's amazing.
You'll be playing on December 11th at Strange Brew with Daniel Thomas Phipps. That's a guy I like.
Another amazing gig, yeah. His voice is one of the best. In his song,
he likes a drink.
I don't know. I can't confirm that.
Oh no, he does.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Thank you for confirming that.
Yeah. And I don't mean that bad. And you did. You said you did an in session at Jackrabbit.
Oh yeah, I just did that this last Sunday. We did a Balcony TV taping recently. Right. Lexi Cardenas, yeah, my violin player, and then we did the in session at Jackrabbit Sound Shack.
That's what it's called.
A studio down south. Yeah. Jackrabbit Soundcheck.
And you're people can find you at scottcollinsproject.com. What about if they want to go to Chicken Run Studios?
We do have chickenrunstudios.com.
Okay, chickenrunstudios.com.
It's just a little simple website, yeah. But yeah, you can go to that. Also, we have on Facebook, like I said, if you just Google Scott Collins Music and just spend 20 minutes just looking through, you can find everything. There's Sideshow Paradise Records /Chicken Run Studios on Facebook, Scott Collins on Facebook, yeah. And yeah, all over the internet, Reverb, Pandora, Spotify, iTunes, wherever.
He's everywhere, people.
Yeah.
And you could check out the very popular song Marigold.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Love for you too. And yeah. Some of the new stuff.
And sure. The new EP is coming out in March.
We're hoping, yeah, right now we're shooting for an early March release, and I'm working my hustle off on it, so I don't see why it isn't going to happen. So, yeah,
hopefully
looking for early March for the first EP release, and then until then, just kind of a lot more going on. Playing in town, out of state, San Antonio, Chicago, Colorado, going back to Nashville for a solid run in January. I've got a co-writer out there I work with, a legendary Sonny Throckmorton, his daughter, Debbie Throckmorton. Have you heard of Sonny Throckmorton? Old time, just legendary Nashville country songwriter. He's, I think, more number ones than any outlaw country songwriter at one like stretch of time.
Really?
Or something. Yeah. Yeah. We wrote a song together in an old Willie Nelson IRS house that Sonny Throckmorton's living in, one of Willie's old hideout houses, Debbie and I met there and wrote a song called I Ain't Got Time for This Guilt Trip that we're working on out in Nashville because, quick story, Sonny Throckmorton comes out, this legendary dude with his little cell phone, goes up to Debbie and he goes, hey, what are all these things? She goes, well, those are text messages, Dad. And he goes, well, what do I do with them? She goes, well, you read them all, and then you delete each one by one because, you know, one might be Willie for a session or this or that. And he goes, okay. He goes back in the room, comes back out. 30 seconds later, he goes, well, what does this button do? She goes, well, that highlights them all and deletes them all. And he looks at her, and he looks at his phone. He looks back up at her, and he just pushes her and deletes, like, 178 messages. She goes, what are you doing, Dad? Seriously, what if Willie wanted you for a session? He goes, well, I ain't got time for that guilt trip. So we wrote a song, I Ain't Got Time for That Guilt Trip, and he dug it, so it was fun. But yeah, it'll be good to go back out to Nashville and see them. But,
Nashville, man. That's a nice town. I like it there.
I like it. I'm getting to know it a lot more through booking it. versus booking Austin. Like, my hustle right now is in Austin, and I've worked, you know, on booking tours with my other bandmates and managers, whatever, in the past, but now I'm doing everything alone. So it's really cool to get to know the other markets and the other regions and how they work versus Austin. Someone even asked me the other day in the Balcony TV interview or something, was the, you know, how do you feel about the, is it competitive in Austin? I was like, actually, it's kind of awesome in Austin compared to other markets right now. The competition is nowhere near the same.
Well, the thing about it is that there's not industry, big industry here.
Exactly.
So we can support each other.
We can support each other. We're not just fighting against each other to then play for only each other.
Yeah. When every other dude starts getting like $500,000 publishing deal, then you'll see it won't be as supportive. They'll be like, where the fuck did Scott Collins get that? And fucking I'm Daniel Thomas Phipps.
Yeah. Yeah.
DTP. I like him.
I love him. I love him. I love his music. I love the gigs that I have coming up. And I'm accepting more gigs, but a lot of these I kind of put together. Mm-hmm. And I'll always book stuff with people that I love. That's why I can't wait to get you on the right gig. I would love to book you.
Oh, yeah.
Your projects for something.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah,
that would be nice. Oh, thanks for coming to that gig the other night, too.
Oh,
you and like 4 other people came. That's unbelievable.
400 of us. Yes, you're right. Yes, it was great.
That was a nice series. That place is nice.
I know.
When I saw the PA
and
I saw the monitor, I was like, oh, fuck. But it sounded fine.
Oh yeah, it sounded wonderful. Yeah. It sounded perfect right out there.
Well, thank you for coming. People get out to scottcollinsproject.com. The Sleeper EP is available. Go to scottcollinsproject.com or just Scott Collins Music on the Google.
On the Google.
Because
and you'll
apparently Scott Collins is secretly sponsored by the Google.
The Google. Not Google, the Google. And match.com. Sorry, my lovely girlfriend.
Google myself.
You're gonna don't.
Did you
Google
meet your girlfriend
yourself
on Match.com?
No.
Because I was gonna say.
No, that's just an old
what's
joke.
What's going on Match.com?
No.
I'm on there.
I'm on Match
this afternoon, man. I'm filling out my profile.
No, that's an old joke. From stage, I don't know why. You know, as songwriters, we have these stupid stage banter jokes that we work out. And so, yeah, one time, I guess at the Driscoll, I was like, yeah, and you can find my music at Match.com. And everyone laughed. So I thought that was a good joke. And by the third gig, I realized it's not a good joke. So this, I'm retiring it here.
I think it's a good joke.
I'm keeping it. I'm going to keep that joke. I like that
joke. Why don't
joke
you retire it? I'll pick it up. I'll credit you with it.
I'd rather flip-flop.
I would say the joke and then go, brought to you by Scott Collins.
I've
sponsored
never,
by the Google.
Yes. It's a deal. It's a deal. We'll shake via your 1984 tambourine.
Tambourine, yeah. Dude, I've had a great time talking to you. Is there anything I'm missing?
No, man. No, thank you so much.
You're a great guy.
It was such an honor to talk to you.
Yeah, likewise.
Same to you, man.
Yeah. There's something kind of Amish-y looking about your hat. Your
oh,
look,
I've right gotten now that so much. And this is the least Amish hat I've ever owned. This is the least Amish hat I've ever owned, but I am just...
Or kind of if you had payas, you could be a Hasid.
Oh, you have no idea. I've had no idea. No, I've an accident. I've just been everything. And as my mother said when I was younger, if I just covered this part of my face and this part of my face, I look exactly like Johnny Depp, which unfortunately is my entire face. But with the hat I had and long hair and I had this weird thing, I always get that. But if I
own the finger tattoos, he's got weird.
Well, now, but always growing up, I've either gotten all those or if I cover most of my face, I look like Johnny Depp. Yeah.
Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me, brother.
Yeah, Scott Collins, man, great guy. Go to scottcollinsproject.com. They have a new album that's going to be dropping in March of 2017. But if you go to scottcollinsproject.com, you can pick up his EP, Sleeper, which is available there. And also, don't forget, if you're listening to this, the day that it comes out, Tuesday, November 22nd, Scott Collins Project will be playing tonight at the Mohawk. Go to scottcollinsproject.com. Find out all about the dates. Find out about the music. Follow him on the social medias. Thank you, Scott, for coming by. Great conversation with him. Super nice guy. And listen, guys, you're probably listening to this while you're traveling or something. I just want to wish all of you a very happy Thanksgiving. I'm very thankful for you guys. I'm glad that you listen to this show. It means a lot to me. The show means a lot to me. You guys mean a lot to me. Your listenership means a lot to me. So happy Thanksgiving. I'm thankful for you. And enjoy. Enjoy some more music from Scott Collins from his album, his EP Sleeper, which you can find at scottcollinsproject.com. All right? Happy Thanksgiving. Let's get down. Gobble, gobble.